Cold mornings, frosty windows. Yep, it's that time of year. So treat yourself and start your day with a cup of fresh roasted Sterling Roastery coffee, sourced from around the world and roasted multiple times a week for unbeatable freshness. It's the kind of warm-up every sports fan deserves this holiday season. And right now, you can win one of three $50 Sterling gift cards, perfect for gifting or building your own winning lineup of Java in the morning. Enter today at sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways so you can wake up, warm up, and Sterling up this holiday season. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways.
125 defining moments, one legendary league. This is Darren Hayes of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, and a great book is out right now, NFL Moments, 125 Icons and Stories That Define the NFL. It's a definitive visual history of the National Football League, packed with iconic images and untold stories behind the game's biggest plays and its greatest players. From the early legends like Red Grange to today's stars like Patrick Mahomes, this book is a touchdown for fans who crave more than just stories. So give your football bookshelf a Hall of Fame upgrade or snag a holiday gift for that NFL history buff on your shopping list. Pick up NFL Moments, available now at your favorite bookseller. You're just in time to join Timothy P. Brown and I as we go back in time to talk about one of the most exciting offenses in college football history. Tim's up in just a moment to tell us all about it.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And welcome to another Tuesday. And Tim Brown of FootballArchaeology.com joins us to tell us about one of his recent tidbits. Tim, welcome back.
Hey, Darren. Looking forward to, I guess, providing my spin on a old football story.
All right.
How's that sound?
That sounds good. That sounds good because it's in one of the words of your title of your tidbit that we're going to be conversing about tonight. And that tidbit, it was titled Minnesota's Spinner and Their Ineffective Passing Game. So
yeah,
this sounds like it's maybe a roller coaster ride of emotions here.
It is. It's kind of a yin yang,
Right.
Well, it is one of those things that, sometimes you watch these old films and so this is one of these where it would help to go and actually check the tidbit. And cause I've got the, film of a 1946 Michigan Minnesota game embedded in the tidbit.
But both, you can do that while you're listening to the podcast. The link is in the notes. It's also in the YouTube channel show notes. So hit, click that link and can watch the films as Tim's talking about.
Yeah. So, it's one of those things where I guess on the one hand, football was so precise back then. If you watch the mechanics of some of these 1920s and then especially 1930s football teams, the backfield movements, the misdirection is just crazy. The faking that they're doing. And so one of the things that they do with Minnesota's team under Bernie Bierman is they do the spinner, they do the half spinner and the full spinner. And the spinner starts with Walter Steffen at Carnegie Mellon in 1924. He was an All-American quarterback at Chicago under Stagg. And, it's that whole thing where, the quarterback gets a snap and then turns around, and sometimes turns this way, turns that way, spins around, faking handoffs, and it's like bizarre. And yet, you can imagine that it would be confusing if you're the defensive lineman, right? Or the linebacker.
Or the referee.
Yeah. Well. And, it's kind of a fun thing just because, kind of what this tidbit does is it looks at, I have a 1946, I think it is, Wheaties promote, premium kind of giveaway that written by Bernie Bierman, or at least, supposedly written by him. And it's got a bunch of his play designs, and here's the technique for doing a half spin and da da da. And then it's kind of mirrored up with the YouTube video of them executing some of those plays that he shows in this premium. And they're playing Michigan, and Michigan runs the single wing at the same time, and they're doing spinners too. So it's just kind of a funny thing. So they're so precise in their backfield movements in the running game. And yet then they also start trying to pass in the same game, and they suck. There's no other way to put it. By modernize, or according to modernize, they hadn't developed cup protection. Linemen couldn't, extend their arms. They had the shoulder block and all that kind of stuff. So the running backs were, or the backs were under pressure anytime that they tried to pass. There's one play where, like, you see this guy, he gets the direct snap, and he drops back like 10 yards from where he got that snap. And then he throws this terrible screen pass. So they're just so archaic in their passing relative to kind of the intricacy of the running game and the faking that they're doing. To me, I just find it to be a really interesting contrast, because, then not too long after that, we got guys throwing the ball downfield. Early 60s, they're throwing, especially like the AFL, they're throwing that ball downfield. And, with the T formation and all that kind of stuff, I mean, there's things change very quickly, from the late 40s to the early 60s in terms of the style of play in football. So I don't know. I find it to be a really interesting period where there's this really archaic running style, yet it's very precise. And then their passing game is just, quarterbacks are throwing off their back foot all the time. They're kind of backing up, and it's a mess. It's a mess.
Do you think maybe it could be because, they're so precise in their footwork at the beginning of the play that maybe it throws off the timing at the latter end of the play, like they're getting their footwork right? I mean, that's all you're thinking about, how much you're processing in a human mind in 4 or 5 seconds, and maybe it just throws off the timing for the rest of that play for them.
Well, so I can't tell you exactly when this occurred. I got it written in one of my books about the football terminology, but the whole idea of precise 3-step drops, 5-step drops, 7-step drops, none of that existed at the time, right? That was a 1960s kind of idea, even into the 70s. So quarterbacks were not trained to, timing routes, as we think of them, didn't exist, right? They found an open guy, and they had reads, but the whole, the idea of boom, 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 I'm going to take this many steps, I'm going to make a read, and I'm going to throw the ball right now, none of that existed at the time. So it was much more like a backyard game, where you and your buddies are out there at the, up the street at the park or out on the street or whatever, wherever you played, just running around doing patterns. And yes, they had specific routes, but none of it was timed as the whole game is today. And there weren't specific reads the way there is today. It was just so much more archaic, so basic.
I guess what I was getting at, though, maybe almost like you relate it to like baseball, like a baseball outfielder. If they're going to drive that ball, to throw home or to throw into second, they're going to take an extra step to set their body up in position to get the ball. Where, an infielder maybe just trying to get a play to second base, shortstop trying to field it and get second base, he's going to throw off balance. And, doesn't have a lot of oomph behind the ball. Maybe as I guess that's what I'm saying is maybe with all the footwork that the quarterbacks are doing, the fakes and the spinners to, and then you go back to pass, you're off balance. You're not lined up right. You're just releasing the ball.
I would just say that, like, my sense is that they didn't pass off of spinners. You know what I mean? It was like either that, they either did the intricacies of the run game, or they passed.
Or they just drop back and
catch
a ball. And it was, I gotcha.
You know, obviously a lot of rollout too. And they just weren't as well schooled, well trained. And, you know, I mean, I'm not faulting that. I'm just saying that was the nature of the game at the time. It just wasn't as precise. Whereas they were precise with the running game.
So what do you think? What happened? Why don't people run the spinners today? Why don't they do that? If it's an intricate part of the running game and throwing, is there somebody that figured out a way to stop it or?
Yeah, I think you know, for the most part, people decided, and this is really the original, like the modern T, and even the split T, which came out like a year later, everything there became much more about hit the line now, you know. So instead of, there's still misdirection in football, there's counters and whatnot, but nowhere near the misdirection, you know, that existed back then. You know, linemen didn't have as many tools in their kit in terms of how they could block. They couldn't extend their arms, those kinds of things. So they had they could get like one hit on a player, and you know they could drive block, obviously, but you know sometimes that didn't work. But so I think it was more just that it was a transition period where the modern T and the split T were all about, instead of intricate backfield play and misdirection, it was about, boom, we're going to hit the line now, right now. And, you know, the immediacy of it and shield blocking as opposed to drive blocking somebody out of the way. And so it just, everything was about speed to the ball, speed to the line. And so that was the real transition. And that's what, you know, football for the most part is about now. You know, I mean, even like, you know, inside outside zone, they're still hitting the line pretty darn hard and then cutting back. And, you know, I don't know. It's, I think it's just a fundamentally different view of the game.
I guess maybe the closest correlation in the modern game is maybe like a triple option teams, you know, where they're putting all the pressure reading off the defensive end and that quarterback's holding it, he's pitching it or he's passing it. You know, it's, you have that threat of how that defensive end's going to react to what's coming at him.
Yeah. But you know, like in the original stuff, I mean, they weren't, a lot of times they were only reading like one guy, you know, or like they weren't reading anybody, you know, they were just boom. You know, it's complete. We're going to this hole. That's it.
Our guys are going to block your guys, and we're going to.
Yeah. Whereas, like, I mean, I still, you know, love the option, and you know, now the current version, the read option, you know, which is a really different way of thinking of. You know, it's like instead of we're going to predetermine where we're going, we're going to go where you tell us we should go. Right. Mm-hmm. Same thing with pass routes. We're going to make the reads, and we're going to go where you're not. Right. You know, it's kind of the same thing, but football wasn't there yet. You know, that whole reading option mentality didn't exist. And really the split T is what introduced that to football. The split T really is the first option offense, and, you know, deliberate reading one individual player and making his decision on him. And so it's one of those things, like people aren't, nowadays, people don't recognize the importance of the split T, but fundamental to the development of football, I think.
Yeah, but yeah, very, very well said. And you dig into a lot of these fundamentals of football in your tidbits, and tell us some stories about it and some of the great legends of the game that really navigated and made the game to what it is today, and the innovators and some of the unique items that happened in your tidbits. So maybe you could tell folks how they could share the tidbits as well.
Sure. Just, go to footballarchaeology.com. It's a Substack site. You can, follow on that, on the site, and then you won't get an email, but you can come in and you'll see listings of it. If you subscribe, you'll get an email every time that I, create a new story, or just follow me on Blue Sky, or just bookmark it and come out and look around anytime you want. So,
All right,
best
Tim.
way.
All right. Well, we really appreciate you coming on here and sharing this one. And folks, make sure you check out those videos on at the links that we get on Tim's site and check that out. And love to talk to you again next week, Tim.
Very good, sir.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
You did not see their faces on the Wheaties boxes, nor did they have the headlines, but they were breaking barriers, one pitch at a time. The integration of minor league baseball, a history and player register, 1946 to 1959, by Rick Swain and Gary C. Fink, shines a light on the overlooked heroes who paved the way for future legends. From dusty bus rides to hostile crowds, these players fought for a place in a game that did not want to see them win. More than history, it's a tribute to courage, perseverance, and the power of a game to change. Honor their legacy today and grab a copy of The Integration of Minor League Baseball at your favorite bookseller.